me down and mess me around. And then worst of all, never thought, baby, when you say you will. But I love you still. I need you more than anyone, darling. You know that I have from the start. So fill me up, buttercup, don't break my heart. I'll be over at 10.
Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. So glad to be with you. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy Big Ed Davis. Thank you very much for joining us. It is Friday, October the 15th already. In a few minutes, we are going to be talking with Lindsay Burke of the Heritage Foundation. And we're going to talk with Lindsay about dropping F grades in school. That's exactly what a Minnesota middle school is doing. Dropping any failing grades for the kids. Is that a good thing? We're going to talk about it. And a new Gallup poll showing Americans reverting back to wanting less federal government. Less federal government. We're going to get some thoughts on that, along with a few other things, from our eye in the northern sky this morning, Angelo Ceresi. So stay tuned for that as well. And a Biden Supreme Court commission says leave the number of justices alone. Don't tamper with the number of justices. We're going to look into that as well. And we have a very interesting top 10 for you, our ultimate top 10. The top 10 tallest men in history. In history. Wait till you see how tall some of those guys really were. So stay tuned for that. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. Guys, for the best haircut in Tampa Bay, I keep telling you this, you got to get over there in Dunedin to Andrew's Master Barbershop. It's in the Overcash Plaza on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580 Main Street. Call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. Also, always a tip of the hat to Good Morning Clearwater, Monday through Friday, preceding our show, 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Let Paul and Tracy start off your day with the latest in news, entertainment, and all kinds of good things. Good morning, Clearwater. Well, lots going on. I see Biden walking away from being interviewed by any reporters again yesterday as he talked about supply chain situation and a few other things yesterday. I think it was early afternoon, if I remember right. Maybe it was late morning. Anyway, individual jobless claims fell below 300,000 for the first time since the early days of the virus. This is according to the Labor Department in a report yesterday. So we are getting back to our old self. Of course, we're paying more for everything. But first-time jobless claims totaled about 293,000. That's the best it's been, the lowest it's been since March of 2020. At that point, we had 256,000 claims. So we're very close to that. The Dow Jones looked pretty good yesterday. I've been worried about the stock market just tanking, you know, with all the bad news we're getting. Supply chain and prices of everything, inflation. But it's holding on, at least so far. That's kind of interesting. Why does nobody understand that when you stop giving people money for staying at home, that they will go back to work? As every state has been able to pull away those federal extra unemployment benefits, people are going back to work. Now, we still have a huge number of openings. If you know where I'm noticing this? This is funny. This is a personal thing. When I order delivery of food, the places I used to order from, they were very prompt. The food was hot. Everything was good. Right now, it's slowed down amazingly. The food isn't always warm anymore. And I think it's because they do not have as many people available, to drive the vehicles and all that other stuff. So, I don't know. It's just a personal foible, it's just a personal note. But all these little things, you know, right now, we're just not there. Anyway, One other little tidbit I wanted to mention before we get into our interview, and that is that Texas is now going to be allowed to continue banning most abortions. A federal appeals court has rejected President Biden's latest attempt to stop a law, or at least his administration, their attempt to stop a law that's become the nation's biggest curb to the killing of the unborn in nearly 50 years. The decision yesterday could push the law closer to returning to the Supreme Court, which has already once allowed the restriction to take effect without ruling on whether or not it is constitutional. Now, the law in Texas, it bans abortions once basically the heartbeat is detected, cardiac activity is detected. Once that's there, you can't kill it because they're considering it alive and a human being. Usually that is around 6 weeks. Now, you see, with our medical evolvement, we have been able to determine heartbeat and all of the other signs of life a lot sooner in an unborn child than we used to. So around 6 weeks now. Now, you know, they're always going to continue to have abortions. People have been doing it forever, I guess, as long as human race has been around. That doesn't mean it's right. That doesn't mean it's right. And I hear this argument, well, what if the child's malformed? And what if the child is this? Or what? You know, all these what ifs. You're taking the life of a human being and deciding its fate is the way I look at it. Or it's, then they say, well, rape or incest. Rape or incest is like 0.1% of the reason for abortions. And you've got the morning after pills and you've got all kinds of things that can be used. So I always get a little squeamish when people try to bring that stuff up. That's not the norm. That's not the norm. And there are all kinds of people that are willing to adopt. That's another thing to keep in mind with abortion. There are all kinds of people that are out there that are glad to adopt a child. That maybe they're childless and they would like a child. And that's the way it used to work before 1973 and Roe versus Wade. Anyway, they are studying this Mississippi abortion case, and the Supreme Court will be looking at that during the present term. That's going to be an interesting scenario. And that one, some people think, is the gateway to taking a second look at Roe versus Wade to find out whether or not it should stay on the books. So, very active court right now. We're going to talk a little bit later about this commission by Joe Biden. Remember all the talk about adding, what, up to 12 justices? We currently have 13 justices. So the commission did take a look at it, and we'll report a little bit later on that, and we'll comment a little bit later on that. But for the time being, let's take our break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about whether or not grade school kids should not have to worry about getting an F on their report card.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Hello out there. Tune in every Saturday at noon on Tan Talk for Connecting Caregivers with me, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers. Every Saturday at noon, we will find resources, education, and a shoulder for the caregivers. I know it's tough, but we can work it out together. Look forward to you tuning in on Saturdays at noon, where you'll have tons of information. Linda Burhan's the gal who cares for the caregiver.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
I took my troubles down to Madam Ruth. You know that gypsy with the gold cap tooth. She's got a
pack. Hey, we are back. Thank you so very much for being with us, and we're delighted to have Lindsay Burke join us, and we're going to talk about, I don't know, why didn't they have this when I was in grade school? We're going to talk about dropping the F grade, failing grade for kids. They're doing it, believe it or not. They're trying it out, I guess, in middle school near St. Paul, Minnesota. Lindsay, what's going on here with this school, Sunrise Park Middle School?
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure.
This is quite something, and I'm with you. I wish that had been an option.
Yeah.
I was in elementary school. But, yeah, I mean, this is actually a middle school near St. Paul, Minnesota. And they have decided that in the name of, quote, eliminating systemic racism, that they will no longer hand out F grades to students. And so what they are doing is they are basically lopping off the bottom of the grading scale. So 0 to 49 percentiles will no longer be there. And so effectively what this means is that the grading system, when students receive a grade for homework they turn in or tests, that will no longer reflect the quality of the work, nor will it reflect student behavior, tardiness, whether the assignment was completed on time. It will just basically begin with a grade B and move up from there.
This is absolutely, of course, ridiculous. It's going to eliminate any kind of an effort by the kids. I mean, let's be honest. Once you are in the real world, you have competition. And you have competition for your services, and you are, you know, competing for particular job openings. And to take away the incentive to want to better yourself and prepare yourself. There are so many good reasons not to do this. I wonder what was in the thinking of the teachers and the school board at Sunrise to think of this. I just don't understand. Is it strictly a racial thing?
Well, this came after the school completed what is known as an equity audit. And we're seeing schools and public school districts increasingly do these equity audits. And basically what they are is they are a tool that's used by districts to try to assess whether or not there are gaps in what they call equity work. And that would include things like school climate, whether the school has culturally relevant pedagogy in place. They look at achievement gaps, if there are disparities in discipline by race. And so this is all part of an equity audit. Well, this school, the principal, did an equity audit, and in the wake of that audit decided that grading perpetuates systemic racism, and that one way to try to overcome that would be to just no longer give students the grade of F. You know, and if you think a little, if you sort of take a step back and think about the real origin of this, it may sound benign, but these equity audits and the elimination of the F grade, it really is rooted in the tenets of critical race theory. And critical race theory, of course, holds that any disparities in student outcomes are the result of discrimination. And so I think that's really what was that, you know, really drove their thinking when they decided to eliminate F.
And this is going to keep, this is going to, in a way, in its own way, it's going to keep certain groups of people down. We are continuing to point a spotlight right now at black people as if they are needed to be protected because they are not capable. I mean, isn't that true? We're looking at them as if they are not capable.
Well, this go ahead. Is something, you know, when George Bush years ago said the soft bigotry of low expectations, you know, I think this idea of eliminating F grades falls in line with that. Exactly right. I mean, this really is the soft bigotry of low expectations,
yes.
And it is sweeping problems under the rug. It will mean advancing students who aren't prepared to advance to the next concept or the next grade level. And that does them, as you pointed out, no favors in the long run overall.
We're talking with Lindsay Burke. She is from the Great Heritage Foundation, where she is a Will Skillman Fellow in Educational Policy. And we're talking about dropping F grades, specifically this middle school in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. But we're also talking in general about critical race theory and how it is permeating so much of our school systems across the country. Now we have, of course, Lindsay, a lot of these school boards that are kind of being highlighted, I guess, more. I don't know if it's a good thing or not. It might be a good thing. Maybe more parents are taking more active interest in what their kids are learning. We obviously, with all of these different dust-ups, I guess, that are occurring, is it really, as you look at all of this, and we highlight critical race theory, including here, is it a good thing that we're highlighting it and talking about it?
It's certainly active engagement on the part of parents with school boards is a welcome change. I mean, historically, we have seen very low involvement in general with school boards, what is under consideration. When school board meetings happen, voter turnout around school board elections historically has hovered around 10%. And so this is a specific duty of parents to engage with their local school boards. School boards and districts really have significant say over almost every aspect of what happens in your local public school. That would mean everything from curriculum and textbooks to the shape of the school day, the length of how long kids are there, hiring practices of teachers, school bus schedules. So they really do determine important aspects of the school day. And not only that, now you have school boards, and parents are, of course, rightly concerned about the adoption of critical race theory, about schools that are putting critical race theory into practice through things like affinity groupings of students by race, or spending taxpayer dollars on these diversity, equity, and inclusion staff and trainings. Not only that, parents are worried and have rightly been worried over the past year and a half about school shutdowns in the wake of COVID, about vaccine and mask mandates in their children's schools. And so there's a lot for parents right now to be concerned about, and their right to make their voices heard. And that's certainly their civic duty to engage with those school boards.
Yeah, you would think so. Now, I mean, it's even affecting governor's races. Look at Virginia and that governor's race, that whole thing about critical race theory in schools and parent involvement in schools and what they teach has been brought up. It's affecting, right now, it seems to be affecting the race there, you know, for the governor of Virginia. We got the unions involved. The unions are, I guess, somewhat, I don't know, they seem to be somewhat not so glad to see the parents show up at the school board meetings. I don't know. It's just there is a grip by unions, teachers' unions, especially in public schools, it seems to me. And now with more parent involvement, it's just opening up kind of a Pandora's box, don't you think?
Well, look, I think this has caught the school boards off guard a bit to see this level of involvement. You mentioned the unions. The unions, of course, have been a problem for decades, for almost a century now, when it comes to actually empowering families to have some say in their children's education. Of course, they oppose school choice. That goes without saying.
Yes.
But the teachers' unions and the National School Boards Association, they're not that different, honestly, from the teachers' unions, particularly when it comes to their politics. The National School Boards Association, of course, sent that letter to the Biden administration a week before last, basically asking the Biden administration to leverage the FBI, the Department of Justice, everything at their disposal, and to consider even things like invoking the Patriot Act to label parents who are voicing their opinions at school board meetings as domestic terrorists. I mean, this is just a wild turn of events in terms of education policy. And so it is no wonder that education is featuring so prominently. You mentioned the election in Virginia, but we're seeing it across the country that this really is. I mean, education has always been a kitchen table issue.
It is, yes.
It has have been so important to families, but we're really seeing that elevated to a new level now.
Yeah, usually you don't find it becoming a make or break issue for an election. You know, it's always there hovering around. It's always of importance, but now it's been elevated. It's been elevated. And I don't know if the mainstream networks are playing it down or playing it up. At first, it seemed like the mainstream media was playing up the confrontations as if, you know, we've got these thuggish people that are showing up at these meetings, you know, and scaring school board people and teachers. But it's kind of turned around a little bit now. It's not so much that anymore. It's almost like, you know, there's sympathy. And if you look at the polls, people, I think, generally are backing the parents that are showing up and people that are showing up to protest and to take a second look. I always wondered if it would be interesting to have a parent be in the back of a classroom, like almost like on a regular basis across the country, if that wouldn't help a little bit in keeping teachers kind of on point. You know what I mean?
Look, at the end of the day, these are public institutions that are taxpayer-funded, right? And so parents should certainly have the maximum level of transparency possible about what is going on in the classroom. The way our K-12 system is designed really is anathema to every other aspect of American life, right? We force the public funding of these government schools. We compel you to attend. You have to send your child to school. And then we go a step further and we assign your child to the public school they will attend. And so it is this sort of iron triangle of government delivery of schooling where it's government funded, government run, compelled, and government assigned.
Yeah.
And of course, this is why at the heart of it, we haven't seen improvements over time. We have seen special interest groups like the teachers unions and the National School Boards Association be able to capture public education in a way that has really pushed families to the sidelines. And so I think thankfully we're starting to see that turn a little where, you know, and everything that's happened over the past year and a half now with COVID giving families more of a seat at the table to see what their kids are being taught, it has really catalyzed a new level of involvement. And I think that is welcome and will be to the benefit of education broadly over the long run.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wonder how long this attempt to drop the F grade at a school like this one in Minnesota, I wonder how long it's going to last. Are we going to get our head back screwed on straight, or do you think more schools will do this, or are they doing it? I mean, I suspect there are colleges that are looking at not, you know, giving kids a passing or failing grade, too. But do you think it's going go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, the University of California, their Board of Regents recently, it was in the wake of a settlement agreement, but they have completely abandoned the SAT and ACT because they said the lawsuit claimed that the tests were biased against minority and low-income students. And then in Oregon in the K-12 space has said we will no longer have math and reading testing requirements for high school graduation. So you're right, we're seeing this is not isolated just to this one school.
My goodness. Lindsay, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so very much. We got to highlight these kinds of things, talk about them. I think in general, you know, I think parents are kind of picking up on more involvement. Vouchers and school choice are things that even some Democrats are starting to embrace, reluctantly in some cases, unions are not. But I don't know, maybe we're moving toward a better place in all of this. But thank you very much, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Lindsay Burke, Heritage Foundation. All right. Let us take our break. When we come back, a new Gallup poll showing Americans reverting back to less federal government. They want less. Going to get some thoughts on that, along with a few other things, from our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi.
This This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen.
And I'm Tracy Allen.
Please join us every weekday morning from 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
You can also watch us on Facebook Live on our Good Morning Clearwater Facebook page and on YouTube. Just search Tan Talk Radio Network.
Every morning we'll be talking about current events, sports.
Yay, sports.
News, entertainment, weather, and traffic. Have an opinion? You can call us.
That's right. Join us every weekday morning, 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Thank you so very much for being with us on a Friday. And by the way, we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the beloved Tan Talk Radio Network. But if you can't listen to us live, thanks to Big Ed, you can go to our website and listen to us on podcast. We put all our shows on podcast. Just go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Look at the top. There's the podcast button. Click, and there you go. All right. Well, we got a new Gallup poll that has come out, and it says that Americans are shifting back to favoring a more hands-off approach for government in addressing the nation's problems. Well, look, we're watching Biden. No wonder. We want more of a hand. We want no hands. None. No approach. Stay in the closet. Stay in the bedroom. Currently, 52% of those polled say the government is doing too many things that should be left to individuals and businesses, while 43% want the government to do more. Now, in contrast, 54% last year, 54% said the government should do more. So now it's 43%. So that's pretty, that's an 11-point drop. Now, this is a question that Gallup has been asking forever, on whether or not the government should be involved more or less. The shift toward favoring a more active government role last year was seen by Democrats and independents in particular, but not Republicans. Well, of course, Republicans always want less government. We got a guy that I think wants less government. This guy in the northern sky, Angelo Ceraci. And Angelo, are you surprised? I'm not surprised. I think people are watching what's going on and the hand of government that seems to be screwing up the prices and the border and everything else.
You know, it's in our nature to be independent and to not want government hounding us for every little thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we mind paying taxes for the services that we get from our towns, our cities, and our communities. But they want a hands-off. They want less government. There is a group of people in this country that probably want more government.
Always.
Where they can get more handouts. They can't do things on their own. They're not independent. You know what I'm saying? But I think the majority of this country wants to be independent. That's why we have the Independence Day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We didn't.
People forget. People forget that the whole point of being being what we are was the unshackling and the freedom from the overreach of, at that point, the king.
Right.
King George.
It's like the king was kind of like a father figure back then,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, he could be. He could be, you know, helpful, and he could, you know, you need me. I'm going to take care of you. That was the king, of course.
Right.
It was his way of taking care of you. You didn't have any say in it, you know.
Right, but you know the thing is, they don't teach that in the schools anymore. All they teach is hate America. We're a racist country. We're this. We're that. This stems from the liberal professors in the colleges. And in the high schools and in the grade schools, when they start teaching that, you're developing a society that hates America, and you're saying that we need the government to take care of us.
Yeah, in fact, we just had a woman on from the Heritage Foundation. We were talking about dropping failing grades in certain schools because the children, particularly those that are minorities, are not able to compete, and that's because we've been keeping them down, and it's our fault.
It's our fault for doing that. Instead of letting people be who they are, you know, educate them the way it's supposed to be. Go back to the basics, reading, writing, arithmetic. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And our culture. They're destroying our culture. That's what they're trying to do. That's what the Nazis did. That's what the Bolsheviks did. They destroyed the state.
Yeah, government control.
And then they put their own government in.
Yeah.
This is all the, and then as the generations grow, that's all they know.
Yeah. It was funny. You know, I read... I'm kind of interested in the whole situation during World War II. And, you know, Hitler hated socialism, but yet he was practicing it in his own way. They were both, you know, Stalin in Russia and Hitler in Germany were both practicing government control. They were practicing it in different manners, and they hated each other, but they were both practicing top government control. And it seems like a socialist approach here in this country is top-down government. It's never supposed to have been that way. That's why the Constitution made the states and local government stronger than the federal government initially.
Absolutely. And that what they've done in the years since, I would say from the 60s, maybe from the days of Roosevelt, because Roosevelt, let's face it, I mean, he was a good president, but he was also a socialist type of guy.
Oh, yeah. He had all kinds of social programs. He's sort of the guy that started allowing government-run programs to take over free market programs in certain cases.
Well, I think at that time, coming out of the Depression to put people back
yes.
to work, that was needed at the time. You know what I'm
well,
saying?
You know, I think there's a good argument that would say Hoover was right and Roosevelt was wrong, and that Roosevelt extended the Depression by having more government involvement. Because, but I mean, you can argue that forever.
Right.
In some cases, the hand of government, but I'm not so sure that it didn't lengthen the Depression. What Roosevelt did. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you know, then World War II was what brought us out of the Depression.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
I mean,
abruptly.
And then like from the 1950s, we were prospering. The United States was becoming stronger, becoming a world power, and everything like that. And but then in the 60s, the radicals started taking control, especially of the Democratic Party. Remember, they had the riots back in the 60s. I think in 1968, during the presidential nominations, there was riots.
Yeah, in Chicago, 1960. I was working at WGN Chicago, very young, by the way.
And the
riots were going on right around us. Yep.
Right, and then the radicals in this country started taking over the Democratic Party, more or less. And as time went on, it started getting worse and worse and worse. And this is what we have today.
Yeah.
We have a radicalized Democratic Party. The Democratic Party, my parents were both Democrats. The Democratic Party is not the party of yesterday.
Oh, no.
It's not the loyal opposition, you know, as they used to say.
Sure. In fact, we've said it many times on the show, John Kennedy today would be a conservative Republican.
He'd be a conservative Republican. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Not like what these people are today.
No.
And what they're doing. They're causing, and look at Biden's poll numbers, really dropping.
38% in some
cases. The percentage of people wanting big government is way down.
Yeah, exactly. They want reduced government again. And that's come and gone, as we said, this Gallup poll generally. Last year, 54% last year said the government should do more. But now, only 43% say the government should do more. 52% say the government's doing too much. Look what it's doing, though. Look at the supply chain issue we got out there in California right now with all those ships that are sitting there on the water, right?
Right.
We don't have enough trucks. And truck drivers, we can't get the stuff off the ships. So here's Biden, and what is he doing? I think he held a news conference again the other day.
Yesterday, I guess.
Yeah, and we're going to make him work 24 hours, or they're going to work 20. They're not going to make any difference. They almost were working 24 hours. The unions.
Right. Well,
3 8-hour shifts.
Airlines.
Huh?
You mandated them, right? What did the pilots do? Geez, I don't feel good.
Yeah, right. That's another thing.
What they have done, what the Democrats complicated this pandemic issue by paying people to stay home. They were making more staying home than they would be going to work, right?
So, yeah.
And they think by giving people money that they're going to get their votes. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's the thing. And then letting in all these illegal aliens, They want in this bill that they got that was it $3.5 trillion or $5.3 trillion?
$3.5 trillion. But actually, it is closer to $5.5 trillion when you actually look at what they're trying to do. But go ahead, yeah.
What they're trying to do with the voting rights? They want to give people. They want everybody to vote on the same day, but or extend this. They want to give money to illegal people to go to college. They don't even do that for the American people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So they got all this money. They're trying to buy their votes. And they also got a thing in there for amnesty. They want these people to become American citizens. You know, there's so many pages. Was it 25,000 pages in this bill?
2,400 or something. So many that nobody, none of them will have read it. Not one of them.
Right, but if it wasn't for some of the news channels, not ABC, CBS, nobody's delving into it to explain to the American people what's really in it. And you break it down, you see what they're trying to do. And it shouldn't pass.
Yeah.
And those 11 Republicans that went along with the extending the debt ceiling to December, they're not Republicans. I don't know what they're trying to do, you know?
Yeah.
But and if the election were held today, remember Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine?
I loved Alfred. I used to get that magazine every month. Go ahead.
He would win the election.
Yes, he would.
If it were held today.
Hey, you know who's supposed to look a little bit like him? Buttigieg.
Buttigieg, you're right.
He might be the reincarnation of Alfred. By the way, he's our transportation secretary.
Yeah, he was a mayor of what? What city?
South Bend, Indiana, where Notre Dame University is. Yeah.
First-term mayor, right?
I believe first or second-term mayor.
And now he's the secretary of transportation.
Yes. What's he doing, by the way, as far as...
He's been secretary of transportation, going on now? 9, 10 months, right? When Biden took office?
Yeah, that's correct.
And he's supposed to have taken charge of that, all that... All the ships docked out at sea over there.
The supply chain. The supply chain deal, yeah.
The supply chain.
Yeah.
Isn't this how Venezuela...
But you know what he said? I heard him say it. Got on in front of a camera yesterday. He said, what, me worry?
Huh?
He said, what, me worry?
Me, right, me worry.
Remember that? That was Alfred's theme. Alfred, what, me worry?
Don't worry, be happy. while all our ships are out there, our shelves are stockless. I mean, this is what happened in Venezuela with their socialist country, right?
Yeah.
Red lines.
I was going to ask you, by the way, Angelo, there in Rochester, New York, where you are, have you noticed the difference when you go shopping right now? Are you seeing product that is not there?
Oh, yeah. But when my wife goes shopping, she says, you won't believe, this is out of stock, that's out of stock, everything's out of stock. In fact, my son, he works for the county. He works for, like, Child Protective Services, you know?
Yes.
And he uses his car for work, and he leased it. He had 36,000 miles lease on his car, but he had 36,000 miles in 2 years instead of 3 years, right?
Okay.
So So he went to one of the car dealers here. They bought out his lease, and there was only one vehicle on the lot. And he said, I'll take it, you know. In the meantime, he ordered a car, and it just came in a couple weeks ago from January.
Wow.
So, you know.
It took that long.
And you can go to the car dealers out here in Rochester. They got empty lots, no cars.
Really?
Nothing.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean,
yeah.
This is what Venezuela went through.
Yeah, it's beginning to worry me here.
Empty shelves and everything.
What is the cost per gallon of gasoline, regular gas there? Do you know?
Well, it went up to $3.35. They said we can expect 30 to 35% hike in our natural gas for heating this winter. And now they're also saying we may be having even a colder winter than normal.
Oh, boy.
And with the price of gasoline and natural gas prices going up, which means with the hot water heat and everything, that's going to go up. Everything's going up.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, they says we're supposed to get in our retirement 5.9% cost of living.
Are you talking about Social Security?
30 years. So what does that tell you?
I'm sorry?
The cost of living has gone up 5-something percent. So now, those of us that are retired with Social Security and my pension from the Postal Service, we're supposed to be getting a 5.9% cost of living, a COLA. And this is the highest cost of living that we're supposed to get.
In 30 years. Got it. Yeah. And by the way, that also was going bankrupt. I hate to bring that up, but Social Security, you know, the ability to pay and the funds inside that whole
system. Well, you know, I was watching Mark Levin a couple weeks ago, and I was listening to him on the radio. He says, and I'm sure, he's pretty good with his facts. He says Social Security and Medicare is already funded all the time, every month. Excuse me, that the government takes in billions of dollars coming in from taxes every month. He says they're totally funded. What the Democrats do is they tell you a lie, a big lie, that we're running out of Social Security, we're doing this. We have to raise the debt ceiling, otherwise we can't pay our bills. He says, according to Mark Levin, he says, we have our bills paid. We have enough money coming in from the taxes every month. And
Saying
Security is taken care of, and Medicare is
He is saying we really don't have an issue with being able to fund it.
We don't have an issue with that. What they're doing is they're planting in the minds of people that there's money is running out of Social Security and this and that, so that they can raise the debt ceiling, so that they can keep spending more and more money for their social programs.
Got it. It is.
I kind of believe Mark Levin. I mean, you know, the guy.
Yeah,
been around a long time. He just doesn't pull things out of the sky.
No. Well, I think I think you're right about it. If we were to stop wasting our money on other things too, you know, obviously. But listen, Angel, thank you so very much for coming on. I know that your brother Andrew is on a mission of mercy again today.
On a mission of mercy.
Yeah.
He called me last night.
Yes, indeed. And I thank you very much. Thank you so much for coming on. We're going to run now, but the best to you, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Angelo. All right.
You guys all have a good day.
Yeah, same to you. All right. Let's take a short break, and we will be back. You're listening to Freedom Works.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
are back for the final few minutes, and we thank you so very much again for being with us. Well, the Presidential Commission on the Supreme Court released its first report yesterday, and it suggests that an expansion of the court would be unlikely to achieve balance. And you know what they're recommending instead? The rotation of justices. The rotation. Quote, there are also reasons to doubt that court expansion would produce benefits in terms of diversity of efficiency. It says there's no guarantee that a larger court would be drawn from a more diverse group of individuals, and a larger court may be less efficient than the current. So they talk about rotating. Let's see here. The rotation system would see judges rotate between service on the Supreme Court and in lower federal courts. But the report also says that a reform like that could face a constitutional obstacle because the Constitution states that the power of the United States judicial power shall be vested in one Supreme Court. So there you go. All right. So before we get to our top 10, Ed, I was watching our beloved Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and with one eye, and then I was watching our beloved Tampa Bay Lightning with another eye because they were also playing. And in fact, at one point, the Lightning was down like 4-1. And I thought, boy, oh boy, oh boy. Then it was 6-2 or something mm-hmm. like that. I thought, well, that, you know, they're cooked in this thing. They were playing Detroit. And I went back to the football game. Tell me what happened there.
Well, at some point around the third quarter, the Bucs defense and a lot of people around here, fans, decided to put their feet up on the coffee table, fire up the stogie and have a couple of drinks because the game was over.
Yeah.
And the Eagles decided to finish the game. So it got a little close, but the Bucs were in complete control.
Yeah, it seemed like they were. Yeah.
Complete control. I mean, I think they quit a little. Well, they didn't quit, but they relaxed a little early.
Okay.
So.
And going back to hockey, the Lightning won that one in overtime. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know.
They came all the way back. They were down like four goals.
Imagine if they lost 6-2 or something like that where they were down.
That's right.
Opening night, 6-3?
Yeah, in fact, I was thinking Vasilevskiy's goals against average isn't quite as where it used to be right now.
Right.
That's their goalie. So, yeah. Both hockey and the football season are now going strong, and so we're excited about that. We no longer have anybody in our in the baseball playoffs. I guess we're down to what are we down to? Who won the game last night between the Dodgers? And the
Dodgers team? Won.
The Dodgers are now going to play the Milwaukee Brewers in the National League, and the Houston Astros are going to play
the Boston Red Sox.
Yes, the Boston Red Sox. Do you have a favorite?
Are you
going to look for somebody in that one?
You know, in the American League, I would like to see, believe it or not, Boston win because I still think, because of Houston, all their cheating a couple of years ago, and I still think they cheat.
Yeah.
And then if we get to, the World
Series. I think I'd root for Boston. I'm going to root for Milwaukee in the National League.
Yeah, because Willie Adames is there, our old shortstop.
Okay, well, that's
we traded
reason.
Him.
Fair
so,
enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Before we get to our top 10, I'm going to be taking, to the delight, I'm sure, of Big Ed, I'm going to be taking off for 2 weeks. I will be back 2 weeks from today, Ed. Going to go up to Chicago for a wedding, do a few other things. So you will have the music of your life on, which I think in some cases is a reprieve.
Make sure you say hi to the mayor up there from Chicago.
Oh, yeah, Lori Lightfoot. I know you like her. You call her Mayor Beetlejuice, so I will certainly, if I get an opportunity. What was it somebody said to me this morning when I told him I was going to be up in Chicago? He said, well, wear your bulletproof vest. How sad that is. All right. It is time for our top 10, and we have a good one. We have a good one here, Ed. We've got the top 10 tallest men of all time. You're pretty tall. How tall are you, Ed? You're about 6'1".
By the way, you did say the Milwaukee Braves. I mean, Milwaukee Brewers, didn't you? It's the Braves that are in.
No, the Brewers are in, too.
I'll have to check.
The Brewers are playing for the National League Championship against the Dodgers.
You sure? It's not the Braves?
Yeah.
You sure? Because I'll check. But go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, check while we're doing this, or can you?
I don't care about the National League. So.
You don't care about the National League?
I don't care
about
Milwaukee.
The National League. Anyway, I hope Milwaukee's in. All right, here we go. Top 10 tallest men in history. Number 10. Zia Rashid is number 10 from Pakistan. He was 8'2" and 2/4 inches tall.
Wow, we're starting off at 8 foot? Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, he's still alive. He was born in 1987. He's about 34 right now. Number 9. Sultan Kozan of Turkey. He is still alive. He is 39. He is 8'2" 2.8 inches tall. That's a tall man. Number 7. Vaino Milrani, I think it's pronounced, in Finland. He was 8'3" tall. He lived from 1909 to 1963. Number 7. Edouard Beaupre, Canada. He was 8'3" tall as well. So there's actually two number 7s here. And he lived to be 23 years old, 1881 to 1904. Number 6. Julius Koch of Germany. Listen to this one. 8'5" tall. How do you... You have to be ducking all the time when you're in a house. 8'5"? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? If you were 8'5"...
Or getting in a car.
You could dunk a ball easily in a basket without moving, without tiptoeing. Anyway, he was 30 years old. He lived from 1872 to 1902. Number 4. We have a tie for number 4. Franz Winkelmeier from the Austrian Empire, 8'6". He lived from 1860 to 1887. And also Leonid Stadnik of the Ukraine, who was also 8'6". By the way, this guy refused to be measured, so they guessed.
Wow.
They guessed. He lived from 1969 to 2014, recently died then. Number 3, John Carroll, the United States.
Sounds like an American name.
Yep, 8'7¾". He lived from 1932 to 1969. 37. You notice that these really tall people don't live very long.
Yeah, I saw the one guy was 27.
Yeah. Number 2. Another American, John Rogan, USA, 8'9". 1868 to 1905, 37. Number 1. Robert Wadlow, USA, 8'11.1". The guy was just under 9 feet tall, 1918 to 1940. He died at the age of 22.
22.
Thank you so very much. We will see you in 2 weeks. In the meantime, remember, freedom works. I'm a gonna raise a fuss, I'm a gonna raise a holler. About a working all summer just to try to earn a dollar. Every time I call my baby, try to get a date, my boss says,
no dice, son, you gotta work late.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Facet Wealth.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Yesterday, it recommended Moderna's COVID booster shot. This morning, the same FDA advisory panel is meeting to consider second doses of Johnson & Johnson's vaccine. Janssen Pharmaceuticals' Dr. Penny Heaton told members,
over 9,000 participants have received a booster dose of Janssen's vaccine in our randomized clinical trial.
2 months later, she says it was 94% effective in warding off symptomatic infections. The advisory committee is also considering a mix-and-match vaccine booster approach. The date is set. The White House says the Biden administration will lift restrictions for international travelers, both by air and land, on November 8th. They will have to show proof of full vaccination. Former President Bill Clinton is spending his third day in a hospital near Los Angeles, where he's being treated for a non-COVID-related infection. CBS's Dr. David Agus has been in contact with Mr. Clinton's lead doctor, who gave him permission to discuss his case.
He was noted to have an infection in his blood, an elevated white blood cell count. The infection turned out to be a bacteria called E. coli. He was put on intravenous antibiotics. Today, we'll get the results of what particular kind of E. coli it is and what antibiotic it is sensitive to.
A spokesman says 75-year-old Mr. Clinton is up and about, joking and charming the hospital staff. In London, flags have been lowered on Downing Street after a longtime British lawmaker was stabbed to death during a meeting with constituents in the eastern seaside town of Lee. Police say they've arrested a 25-year-old man and recovered a knife. A local lawmaker says the victim, 69-year-old conservative David Ames, hadn't been taken to a hospital more than 2 hours after the attack. Dozens of people have been killed in a suicide bombing attack at a Shiite mosque in southern Afghanistan, packed with worshippers attending Friday prayers. Correspondent Imtiaz Tayyab has details from Kabul.
A Taliban spokesman has said it's on the scene investigating today's attacks, but to carry out such a deadly bombing in Kandahar, the historic seat of the Taliban's power, is a major blow to the group as it tries to assert itself as Afghanistan's rulers.
Rising prices and stalled global supply chains aren't stopping Americans from spending money. Retail sales were up 0.7% in September. CBS's Jill Schlesinger.
Powering the September retail sales report were gas stations, where sales were up 38.2%.